Welcome back to Take Care. It's a pleasure to have you. We appreciate your joining us.
Well, it's great to be here and always fun to join you.
Do you think younger people today are looking for the same things in love relationships and marriage that their parents and grandparents were looking for?
You know, in a lot of ways, I believe they are. I think we have this image that love and marriage have changed so dramatically that we don't see the continuities. And it is true that the average person now doesn't wait until they're married, for example, to have sex for the first time, and women are much more likely to work outside the home. And we look at those externals. But as you mentioned, if you look at surveys, and I conducted a number of interviews with young people in preparation for this book, a lot of what they want out of marriage is strikingly similar to what their parents and their grandparents, and almost even back to Jane Austen's time. At least in the United States, young people want to get married, and they hope to stay married to the same person. And I was surprised initially when I heard that in my focus groups, and then I went back to the research, and it turns out that's precisely what surveys show. So they really are optimistic in a way about their own chances of finding someone and staying married, even if the overall tone in our society is rather pessimistic.
You know, I'm not surprised that people want to fall in love. And of course, given a choice, I'm sure they would say, yes, I'd like to stay married forever once I get married. But I think one of the observations I've made, but I have no research whatsoever, so I would like your input on this. It seems to me like the older generations were more practical in a way. And now it seems like people feel and think they're going to be happy 100% of the time. And they're not willing to stick it out or realize there will be rough patches, where years ago, sometimes it seems like a practical decision, and older people, I hate to put it this way, I don't want to say they settled, but they accepted the fact this is their lot and they were going to make it work. Whether they were ecstatic or not, our society now really pushes a message that everything has to be passionate and wonderful all the time. Do you think that would be a generational difference?
You know, that's an excellent point, and it's honestly one that if I do a second edition of the book someday, I will highlight even more. As I've been going over our data and pondering it some more, I really think that one thing older people are telling younger people is, in a way, where it's useful to think in an old-fashioned way. That is, we've come now to think of marriage as this heart-pounding merging of the souls in which everybody has to be happy all the time, or people should start to think of getting out of the relationship. And for a lot of folks in the older generation, they were more practical in the sense that they looked at some basic issues. Now, they were all in love. Everybody told me who had a successful long marriage, they absolutely believe in love and that nobody should ever get married without it. But they say as soon as you're in love, you have to be careful not to park your reason at the door. And they want young people to think about some questions they ask, like, is this person going to be a good provider? Because they acknowledge, and young people should too, that marriage is a financial relationship that inextricably binds you economically to another person, perhaps for life. Asking, is this person going to be a good parent? And they ask you to think about that not just before you say I do, but early enough on in the relationship that you don't waste your time. So I think your way of putting it is really excellent. They want you to have the powerful in-love feeling, but they also want young people to use their head and be practical, asking, is this person really someone who I can be married to for a lifetime? And I think these expectations that we place on marriage as the be-all and the end-all of our emotional existence, the older folks would say that puts too much pressure on it, and it's a little bit idealistic in thinking about marriage.
So what about picking the right life partner? What are some other do's and don'ts you discovered in your research?
Well, you know, the one thing I love about talking to very old people is, in contrast to your psychotherapist who wants you to answer everything for yourself and work out your own solutions, they're happy just to tell you what to do. And they had some core principles about choosing a mate. And let me say, you know, there were some broader and more general ones. But what really stayed with me were some really practical advice. For example, one key piece of advice they offer is, as you're trying to decide on a person, don't do it all by yourself. Don't just go on your own feelings, but be attuned to what other people think of your partner. And basically, they argue that if nobody else likes your partner, that's an incredibly powerful warning sign. And they themselves, in some cases, married someone who everyone said, this person isn't right for you, and they later regretted it. And so instead of being defensive and saying, oh, you know, you're trying to interrupt my one chance for happiness, they say, look at your social network and see what people are saying about the person you're involved with. And that's one example. Another thing they said about choosing a partner, which really stayed with me, is that as you observe your prospective partner, it may not be so important how they treat you as it is how they treat other people. So as they pointed out, if someone's courting you, they're likely to be on their best behavior. And so what you should be attuned to, for example, are they an angry person? Are they bad-tempered? Are they coming to you over and over complaining how everyone else mistreats them? You know, they can't get along with anybody at work. They can't hold down a job. They say stay very closely attuned, not just to how the person is with you, but how they operate with others more generally. And that's going to be sort of a powerful diagnosis. So I think those are a couple of tips, you know, that looking at this person more broadly and not simply staying with these powerful in-love feelings is, I think, one way to go, at least in the view of the oldest American.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Raff.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And we're talking to gerontologist and author Carl Pillemer. 30 Lessons for Loving is his new book, Advice from the Wisest Americans on Love, Relationships, and Marriage. Let's move on to talking about your chapter heading, Getting Over the Hard Parts. In other words, these are people that have a long view. You talk to people over 65 up to 100 years old and maybe a couple that were older than 100. And they had some very interesting wisdom about what some secrets were for managing the stress. And let's face it, we all have rough patches in our relationships. What was some of their advice?
That is so true. And let me say, I would like to ask your listeners to do a thought exercise. If you think back to that 90-year-old couple you saw strolling in the park, holding hands, and looking as if they are blissfully in love after 65 years of marriage, I've talked to hundreds of them, and in every case, there was an awful period in their marriage. You know, horrific things happened. They were trying to create a marriage, often in the worst economic downturn in human history. People got married, and their husband typically might leave and be in World War II for a couple of years, corresponding only by letters. And they've had dry spells, barren patches, difficulties. And so that was one thing I learned. Almost everybody said, tell these young people that marriage is hard. It's tough. It takes drive. It takes resilience. And don't expect it to be happy all the time. And work through and live through those dry spells. Now, clearly, if there's abuse, if there's violence, if things really get bad, they acknowledge that a relationship perhaps need to end. But I would say the message of these older and wiser people is to try and then try and then, you know, try again. I was thinking about their advice on getting through the hard part. And if I could, you know, give a summary, one point really shines through. And in the book, there are lots of specific lessons. A lot of it comes around to putting your relationship first, to not entering into what happens with, as I call it in the book, the middle-aged blur, where everything becomes this whirlwind of kids' problems, work problems, later on potentially health problems, in-law problems, and you start to ignore your own relationship. Over and over, they argue, in all of those domains, doing regular relationship maintenance and staying engaged is the most critically important thing. And what's great about them is they've been through the times when they didn't and seen how disastrous it was. So it's good practical advice, I think.
All right. Another thing that gets lost is passion. What about keeping the spark alive? Does it happen? Is that practical, impractical? What did your elders tell you?
Well, this for me was a very positive message. And I'll tell you, folks, I was so surprised by my interviews that I had to go back to the research and see if what I was seeing was actually validated in in larger scale scientific studies. So in terms of the spark of intimacy, so let's say what it is and say about having sex, most young people have firmly emblazoned in their minds a concept of the sexless older year. There's really a vision that after 50 or 60, everything stops. Nothing could be further from the truth. The major barrier for older people in sex is not having a partner. For people who have a partner, they are in general active sexually and really find it enjoyable or more enjoyable than it was before when life was filled with all these other stresses. As one interviewee told me, it's great now because this is not for procreation, it's for recreation. And that was a general sense of people. I will say that one thing I did learn in this study is that the whole idea of intimacy broadens and deepens in these long married couples. So even though it's not, you know, the heart-throbbing passion of teenagers, intimacy takes on more of a sublime and subtle edge to it. We're simply being together, holding one another, doing, sort of touching one another is really powerful and fulfilling. However, that's not to the exclusion of, you know, actually having sex, which a lot of people find really still helps to cement their relationship. I will say there's been a lot of recent research, including one study that just came out, showing that there's an actual uptick in the frequency of sexual activity after 50 years of marriage. So it looks like there is some, you know, empirical grounding to this idea that the whole sexless older years are a myth and that people are really much happier about it than you would ever expect. So I think that's good news. Over and over, they told me, tell young people not to worry about this. You know, it's really going to be better than they expect.
I know you had some entertaining discussions about this subject. There was one woman who said that sex was a very lovely side dish. And, you know, something else that there was one woman, and I know you have a YouTube video with vignettes of some of the people that were interviewed. And this one woman I love talked about how she just loves holding her husband's hands in the movies. Oh, I thought that was really sweet and tender.
You know, it's wonderful. Actually, one of the folks, there's a wonderful 94-year-old woman who quite recently got involved with an 88-year-old man. And the line she gives, I asked her if she was planning on getting married, and she said, and this is a direct quote, oh, no, I'm what the young people call a cougar. I'm 94, and he's 88, and cougars don't get married. There is that kind of playful feeling. I mean, I heard again and again and again from people on the subject of love is don't give up. You know, as one person said, you know, love at any age is a beautiful thing. Don't give up trying, even if it seems frustrating. And a surprising number of my interviewees had found a new partner quite late in life, either in the elder community where they lived or through reconnecting. And some of them even do electronic dating. And they're probably the fastest users of electronic dating sites.
What about people who marry early versus people who get married later in life or even are on a second marriage? Do you have any conclusions about which marriages are more successful or what the differences may be?
Absolutely. And this is one time where elder wisdom maps perfectly onto research. A lot of my interviewees, these over 700 people, many of them married very young. 18, 19, 20, almost all of them say, don't do like I did. Wait to get married, have your career established, have your education done. So a strong recommendation is to choose carefully and wait, even though they didn't do it. And research actually shows us, you know, you've heard about that statistic that half of marriages end in divorce. If people wait until their late 20s to get married, it's more like 20%. So it's highly predictive of a long and stable marriage to actually wait until you know yourself and know the other person well. And that was a very strong recommendation of older people, even though they didn't do it themselves. And in a second marriage, often they felt the first one failed because they were too young. And so they say, wait until you're sure and make sure you're sure and don't rush into this.
Okay, we have about a minute left and I'd like to know, what is the bottom line advice you'd give young people looking for love based on all of your research?
Do this one thing. Go and seek out an older couple who's what you would like to be. Go and seek out your future self and ask their advice about marriage and your relationship. It's very easy in our culture to forget that it's only been in about the last 100 years that people have gone to anyone other than the oldest person they knew for advice about something like love and marriage. Go and find your future self in someone and ask the advice of a 70, 80, 90-year-old. Every young person I know who's done it has found that to be extraordinarily helpful and incredibly rewarding.
Dr. Carl Pillermer is professor of human development at Cornell and founder of the Cornell Institute for Translational Research on Aging. His new book is called 30 Lessons for Loving, Advice from the Wisest Americans on Love, Relationships, and Marriage. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Oh, and thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.